It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
This is the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Anfield.
Hello and welcome to the latest Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. I'm Joe Rimmer and I'm joined by Ian Doyle and Paul Gorst is back. Paul, how are we?
Very good, yeah. Good few weeks off. The longest time I've ever had off, I think, certainly since I worked at the Echo. So 5 weeks off in total, missed a couple of games, but still managed to see this one on Saturday, so looking forward to getting stuck into it.
Well, just tell us why you've been away.
Yeah, I've been on paternity leave, haven't I? So been getting a lot of sleepless nights, and that's not worrying about if Jurgen Klopp's going to line up with a 4-2-3-1 or a 4-3-3. So, yeah, she's already a lifelong Red, and she's only a few weeks old.
Oh, very nice, very nice. Well, congratulations from all the Blood Red listeners, I'm sure. Ian Doyle, how are you?
I did 5 weeks, and it feels like about 5 months.
Have you missed him?
Yeah, I've always missed Paul, you know this. Yeah. We're all friends together here on the podcast, especially when we lean in to try and be heard properly. Yeah, so, no, congratulations, Paul.
Thank you.
Even though you technically did next to nothing, let's be honest.
Yeah, I was very much the Pep Linders to the Jurgen Klopp in the delivery suite.
Intensity is your identity.
That's a great way to start, to be honest. One of my favourite podcast starts of all time. That so yeah. Well, from good starts to poor starts, Ian Doyle.
You should be back in the hosting thing. I'm assuming you're about to refer to what happened in the first 15 minutes against Bournemouth. Yeah. I mean, I was having a sit down thinking about this yesterday because I had to do some work, and at the time I'd written, can't remember the last time Liverpool had started a game so badly, even counting last season. And then I actually thought of one where they were absolutely awful, which was Wolves away. Yes. I mean, Wolves away in terms of the start. I mean, there were games against Brighton in which they were quite rubbish all the way through. Brentford in which they were poor in the second half. There were other bits where they've had 20-minute spells. But in terms of an actual start to a game, I think the Wolves one's the only one I can remember in recent memory that could anything like as bad, because that first 15, 20 minutes on Saturday was just... It was like just a bunch of players who'd never played before and seemed a little bit surprised when we come up against a team that actually looked like they might know what they're doing and didn't really give Liverpool any kind of respect or anything. And just, I wouldn't say Bournemouth went for it, but every time they got the ball, they were just pushing forward with like 3, 4, 5 players. And what didn't help is that Liverpool, whenever they got the ball, just seemed intent on giving it straight back to them, which anyone who watched the Chelsea game previous week, I think Liverpool had 35% possession, and Klopp said, didn't he, on Friday? He said, that's an absolute joke. We can't let it happen again. And obviously, in the end, Liverpool won the game against Bournemouth. But yeah, I mean, even a long time after that game, people were thinking, what on earth happened in those first 20 minutes?
Yeah, it feels like, even though, Gorsley, they went on to win the game fairly comfortably and even see out the last 25 minutes or so with 10 men, it feels like a slight concern that first 20 minutes has left the bigger impression on fans, is that fair?
I mean, first of all, I'd like to caveat it by saying that the goal that Jadon Anthony scores after 3 minutes, we shouldn't really discuss that as a kind of analysis point because it's offside, and we only talk about it now because the flag stays up or stays down longer than perhaps it should. We all get infuriated about that.
Yeah, suppose in the past it goes up, doesn't it?
It goes up straight away, doesn't get the chance to put it into the empty net. So for me, that's a bit of a moot point. But even after that, Liverpool didn't really get to grips with things, did they? And Trent's doing this new hybrid role, there's two positions in one, and he looks great there at times. But just back to goal, he takes that heavy touch, and okay, it's a heavy touch, anyone can do that, but Liverpool never really gets set after that, and Antoine Semenya sticks it away, and then Alisson gets booked and could easily have been sent off for, he tries to pass it and doesn't really do anything with it other than give it away, and Liverpool just looked all at sea, didn't they? I wouldn't even say they really massively got to grips with the game. I think they get a fortunate penalty through Szoboszlai kind of going down a little bit easy. The equaliser's great, Lewis Diaz with a superb little bit of imagination for that one. But Yeah, it was a difficult game, probably a lot more difficult than a lot of people thought it was going to be. Mm-hmm. But I think Martin Zavazli actually after the game saying that they're still kind of in a pre-season state in terms of where they are physically. Yeah. And I think that's a good point to make. I think don't think too many teams running through teams this early on the season. Certainly, you know, anyone who isn't Manchester City. So it was a decent win, but more than enough there to concern supporters who, I have to say, normally don't need a lot to be concerned, do they? I've seen loads of perhaps over-analysis of pre-season results and the way Liverpool were defending in particular, but when the real stuff gets going and they're doing that type of stuff where Alisson's giving it away and committing fouls and Liverpool are conceding goals far too easily, then it does start to become a bit of a concern. But I don't think we learnt anything new in terms of Liverpool need a little bit of a specialist screener to be in there and do the dirty work and allow the flair players to flourish, because at the moment they don't really have one, do they? I'm sure we'll get on to Endo shortly, but it was a bit evident that they didn't have that in the first, certainly, 30-35 minutes.
I don't think you could argue against Liverpool's fitness levels, to be fair, because I thought in the second half, as you pointed out, Joe, when they went down to 10, I mean, the front three in particular, mm-hmm. just ran around, just like, you know, they'd offer themselves up for the ball, they were chasing down the opponents, and they made sure that until the last 10 minutes, I think, when Bournemouth finally put on that many forwards and wingers, and they were just putting the balls into the box, Bournemouth didn't really have a chance to do that. So I know all three of them ended up going off, didn't they? Jota, I think he went off first, didn't he? And then Salah and Diaz went off a bit later on. I think that's the way it went. But in that sense, I don't think Liverpool can be too worried in terms of the actual fitness of pre-season. I think it's more the tactical stuff, which is understandable given the fact that they're going to end up with three new midfielders.
See,
I've done this on purpose.
No, you didn't. Yeah, you just thought of a good one.
And no, I didn't. See, I was in context of what I was saying. You were just
own it.
Mate, you were just like putting them in there. Anyway, the other thing I was going to say is, the fans didn't take long to get really fuming on Saturday. I'm not sure whether that came across if you were watching it on television or not. But
it reminded me a bit of Leeds.
Yeah, and they were proper, and all this kind of stuff. And
it's not conducive to players.
Yeah, but it was a little bit like that against Crystal Palace last season, the first game. But the difference there is, obviously, they'd had a bit of an iffy summer with some of the results. They got a load of players injured, which, fortunately, neither of those two things happened this time. OK, they got the draw on the first day of the season, but last season it was against a Fulham side that had just been promoted and they were pretty terrible. Liverpool, that is. And this time it was Chelsea, which I know Chelsea got beat yesterday against West Ham, but Chelsea at home is always a difficult game.
Oh, it's a very difficult game.
So I think to get a point, though, that was reasonably fine. I just think maybe the fans had got a little bit too agitated at the, you know, as Gorsty said, the lack of a certain signing.
Yeah.
And they don't have too much reason to complain about. But what I would say then, though, is in the second half, they were proper behind them, especially after the red card, because it was kind of, they could all see that probably shouldn't have been one. And I think they were well impressed with the work rate of the players, and I said before, especially the ones up front. And I will come on to one player in particular who had a good game.
But it's a bit of a chicken and egg situation for me, that it's, you know, what comes first? Do the fans get up for it, which in turn affects the players positively, or do the players need to start playing a bit before they can, you know, the cop get on side? It's a difficult one, I suppose. There's no real answer to it, but when you start on games as poorly as that, the anxiety sets in around Anfield, and it's always been that way, to be fair, but it doesn't help, does it?
It's funny, isn't it, because you look back last season and they played Bournemouth. Was that the second game, Bournemouth?
The second game at home, yeah.
Second game at home. So they played Bournemouth early on the season, win 9-0, and That was not representation of last season in any way.
When is a 9-0 ever representation?
Well, no, I know, but what I think people, and it sounds an obvious thing to say, but what I think people kind of forget when they talk about football match, about their team, is that they only talk about one team, and there's two teams they're playing, and Bournemouth are actually a handy side, and I think perhaps a little bit better than people maybe give them credit for, and I think maybe the way Liverpool beat them last season might still played on people's mind. They expected a fast start.
Bournemouth are miles better than they were back in March. Thought, even though Liverpool lost at Bournemouth, I thought they were going down, because I thought they were really bad, which showed you how bad Liverpool were that day. But they ended up doing all right under Gary O'Neill, and then got rid of him for some reason. And now they've changed, haven't they, the system, the way they want to play. And they're a little bit like Liverpool light, aren't they, where they do a lot of press and a lot of running around. And that's something that will be interesting, because there'll be other teams, you'll find that quite difficult to cope with.
Yeah. One question I was going to ask both of you is, because I was having a discussion after the game with Kiefer the other day, and he was saying, I'd do away with the formation, the Trent hybrid role now. Yeah. He said, I think they should go back to 4-3-3. I don't think they've got the players for it. I think it served a purpose, but move on. And I'm not so sure. I think the big part of last season's revival was that I think it gave Liverpool something totally different. I think Trent, it got him back playing again. But it looked like early in the game Saturday that a lot of their problems came from formation issues, players not quite understanding where they should be, Trent being a little bit, I don't know, I can't think of the word, but just easy going with the ball. He wasn't really switched on. Centre-half's not really knowing where they should be. Do you think that that's a formation that served its purpose, that they should move on, or do you think that they should persevere with it? They just haven't got the personnel. Endo could help with that.
Yeah, I'm unsure at the moment. It's not quite a unique system, is it? But it's one that isn't used widely. So I can't imagine, McAllister and Szoboszlai coming into the midfield are used to having a right back who's also in there trying to get on the ball and create chances, and then looking at right back and seeing that there's no one there. Especially
when you're Alexis McAllister, you don't generally play as number six.
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
You haven't played a new position in a different formation at a new club.
Yeah. And also as well, I think it's asking a lot of Trent. It's go and play two positions at once. Mm-hmm. I love him as a player, but how good is he expected to be where he's simultaneously never allowing anyone in down the right, but also creating two or three opportunities a game or being the assist king? It's I don't know whether now is the time to maybe draw the line in the sand and what is Trent Alexander-Arnold? That, I suppose, is down to Jürgen Klopp and Pep Linders and the player himself, but is he a right back? Is he a midfielder? Because at times towards the end of last season it looked phenomenal. We've seen him against Leeds, didn't we? Yeah. And he was picking passes at will and rampaging forward, and it looks great, but then you can't just expect him to be perfect at everything. If he's going to be doing this, you've got to expect it now and again. The team's going to get in down the left, and when you do, you can't hang him out to dry. So if you're sticking with it, I think there needs to be a little bit of a realistic collective thought process behind it from critics and fans and journalists and whatever, or decide that he's going to be one or the other.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
It's the same goes for other players as well. I mean, Konate is technically having to play two different positions, isn't he? He's playing like in a back three at one point and then in the back four when Trent comes back across. And I really like Konate, but he's still a young centre-half and he's not as experienced. Doyle, what about you, formation-wise? Are you a fan of it?
What I would say on the formation is this: regardless of whether we like it or not, Liverpool have played it 12 times now and they're unbeaten. So yeah, something's got to be right there.
They've scored a fair few goals,
and they're going to concede more than some of the other formations they've played in the past. Certainly the old 4-3-3. I mean, I agree in the sense that I don't necessarily like it with the players they've got at the moment. I think it's too open. I think there's a little bit of luck involved, and certainly in Liverpool's win against Bournemouth. Overall, they had bad luck with the red card. Yeah. That should never have been one. The penalty, I think it was a penalty. It's one of those ones where if the referee doesn't give it, I don't think VAR says that could be a penalty. But once he gives it, there's not enough for them to overturn it. And it was literally right there.
Yeah.
And there weren't many people in the ground who thought that's not a penalty at that time. So that's just one of those. Well, I know he missed it, but Salah was still alert enough to score. And even the first goal...
Quickly, just intercept that. Will you keep Salah on penalties or would you change it?
Well, we'll come to that in a minute.
Okay.
If I'll come to it now, no. I think they've lost Fabinho and they've lost Milner.
Yeah,
I couldn't believe, by the way, I did a story the other day on goal scoring midfielders and how Endo scored, I think, 5 last season. Szoboszlai got 6 and got 8 assists, and McAllister was 10 and 5, I think it was.
McAllister takes pens.
Yeah, McAllister and Szoboszlai can both take penalties. I think it was James Milner's last goal for Liverpool was on Boxing Day in 2019 against Leicester for the penalty spot.
Really?
That was his 130 games since he last scored. Henderson was 83 games since he last scored, which was the derby against Everton where they won 4-1. And Fabinho's last goal was when he scored at Villarreal in the semi-final of the Champions League, and that was about 50-odd games. So they've kind of got more of an attacking threat in midfield.
Jones as well towards the end of last season.
Exactly, he got a few. And Harvey Elliott likes a goal as well.
You're going to lose some balance at the other...
Well, this is the point I'm getting to. So it's whether or not Liverpool are making that decision that they go, well, maybe we are going to concede a few more goals now. Because we know that the centre-backs aren't quite, you know, in terms of Van Dijk is in his 30s and not quite as... Although I thought he was very good in the second half. What was interesting about Van Dijk is that the minute they put somebody on, like, Kiefer Moore, who's, like, the big, robust old school, Van Dijk was just all over him.
Yeah.
He has a little bit more problem when players are running at him from... Fast players running at him from deep, which is presumably what Endo and an actual defensive midfielder will be able to kind of protect. Yeah. Because that's the one thing that Liverpool have always been, you know, it's always been a problem for them is the runners from midfield. So if you've got a defensive midfielder, they can plug some of the gaps, that'll help. But going all the way back to the formation question, I think they're going to persist with it. So you're just going to have to get used to it. I don't necessarily think they got the right plays for it at the start of the season. But if Endo can just end up, that wasn't deliberate, by the way, can end up just...
get used
to this.
He's only played 23 minutes or so for Liverpool so far. Imagine this at the end of the season.
Dovetailing with Trent or whoever, then it'll help them an awful lot, because you've got to bear in mind that the other... So not only are the four defenders having to learn a new formation, they're also having to learn with three new players right in front of them as well. So it's completely new for them. So I think Joe Matip, well, I know Joe Matip mentioned this in the match day programme, which there'll be a story going on the Echo, in fact it'll be on by now, the Echo website, where he talks about it at length. It's just quite interesting from his point of view. He's talking, not only do we have to learn how to play this new formation, and he's saying that I'm having to adapt, and presumably Canati's the same, and when Joe Gomez goes there, it'll be the same.
You were there last year, didn't you? When you spoke to a handful of journalists, and he basically said Trent can't be...
He can't bang on all the time. Yeah, he's got to come back at some point, so he can't just be covering him all the time. And it's the same for whoever's going to play in front of them. They're going to have to get used to what Endo does, what... You know, they played a little bit with Bacetic. See, I've got his name now, you see.
Yeah.
Bacetic. And whether or not they bring in another defensive midfielder, only time will tell.
But I think if Liverpool don't quite know what Alexander-Arnold is at the moment, they don't know what Robertson is either at the moment, in a kind of, you know, reverse way. Is he a left-sided centre-back now? Is he still the marauding left-back who's made his name with at Liverpool? I'm not sure. And I actually think the way he kind of bounds into the tackle early on for the Bournemouth goal is probably one of the reasons Liverpool concede. Because I think Van Dijk does well to shepherd Solanke a bit wide, and he can't really get the shot off. But then Robertson bounds in. Ball ricochets off Van Dijk, I think, out to Semenya, and he sticks it away with a great strike. And just not sure what Robertson's meant to be. And I can see why there's been loads of talk of that left-sided centre-back role, because, you know, Liverpool playing with a two at the back or a three at the back with Robertson in there, it's a strange one at the moment. I think it's got its merits, this formation. It's just a little bit, like Doyle says, maybe the personnel isn't quite... as attuned as it could be.
We talked about Robertson on Friday's pod. He obviously hasn't been listening too many.
No.
Too much doting on your baby daughter and not enough listening to your friends, Gorsty. I think that's what I've learned. Personally, I think Liverpool have kind of gone back to 2017-18 a little bit. And we saw that team, you know, score a lot of goals, concede a lot of goals. There were some frustrating results that... You know, where they would throw things away. There were times when they'd get absolutely battered. There were times they would take teams apart. And I think fans will have to accept that a little bit this season as they get used to new players, a new formation, a new style. And obviously you saw as Liverpool evolved with that, they bought new players, didn't they? And things settled down. They got used to it. And then they became a more boring team. And I think once they became a team that could control games, took less risks, they became a better team. But I think we're back to the start of that process, and we have to accept it.
Well, I think that's what Endo is, isn't he? Yeah. He's not coming in there to provide assists or anything. He seems very meat and potatoes, defensive midfield, like, get your foot in, yeah, pass it to the more creative players, and you've done your job.
Yeah. Well, how did they go about recovering on Saturday, Doyle? Was it just a case of cracking on and doing, getting back to the basics, or did they make changes?
What, in terms
of Liverpool getting back into the game?
How did they turn around against Bournemouth? Well, they just kept on attacking, didn't they? Because that's what they're actually, they know quite well that they're good at. That was the other thing that was quite bad in the first 15, 20 minutes. They literally just couldn't pass the ball to each other. Yeah. So it kept on coming back to them. And then that's not the way Liverpool wanted to go, which is what happened a little bit, well, actually quite a lot against Chelsea. So that's the worry, is that it went from those first 20 minutes against Chelsea, which were quite good, to maybe not the last 5 minutes against Chelsea, but the majority of the rest of that game was played on the back foot, and that's how it started against Bournemouth. But they turned it around because they did kind of sort out the midfield issue a little bit. What was interesting about Robertson in the second half, when they had to go to 4-4-1, sorry, that's when he ended up having a better game in the second half. I think you're a bit harsh on him for the first goal. He had to come across and do something.
Yeah, I don't know whether... Maybe. It just felt like Van Dijk had forced Solanke wide, and the chance of a goal...
And also, it was quite lucky the way the bounce came to them. But they earned the luck with the way that they played in the first, and Liverpool earned the bad luck because of the way they'd started. But in terms of going mad, they turned it around. They just attacked. Mm-hmm. And that's what, if you've got the three strikers plus Gakpo midfield, which I have to say, I hope we don't really see that very often, because it's not fair on him. He doesn't seem to know exactly what he needs to be doing.
Do you think if Jones had been fit, he would have played?
Yeah, I think probably even Gakpo might have played up front instead of Jota. Yeah. But then Jota as an assist and a goal without being absolutely brilliant, but
that's just Jota, isn't it?
He's one of the most difficult players to ever do the player ratings for, because if he doesn't come up with the numbers of the goals and the assists, then you're like, well, what's he actually doing here? But even when he does do it, he can be a little bit all over the place, but his job there is to score and assist, and if he's doing that, then he should be in the team. I think you, what did you say, 9-11, was
eight, it? 8 in his last 11, yeah, Premier League, and he's only started 7 of those. Very much a patchy goal scorer, isn't he? But he's probably Liverpool's best finisher for me. Two-footed, good in the air, works as you know what's off. And
he finds pockets of space.
He just hits it as well, doesn't he? He doesn't think about it. He's one of these players that the less time he has to think about it, the better he is. Having said that, his assist, and I know it took a slight deflection for the first goal, was very good. He just bounded his way forward and cut it back, and Diaz did a bit of a Diaz thing. Diaz has been a bit... I wrote something about him before the game, just saying that it's a big season for him because he'd had that really good start the first 4 or 5 months, wasn't it? Then he started last season well, then he got the big injury, and then when he came back, he was never going to be expecting too much of him. I think he got that great goal, didn't he, against Tottenham. That was round about the only thing he did. And he actually appeared in the last, I think it was the last 10 games? Last 9 games, actually, I think. It was Leeds, wasn't it, the first one. So in the summer, he didn't start particularly great in the first friendly, but since then, he scored in almost every game. And he scored against Chelsea, and he scored here. So he's kind of keeping his place when Jota could be on the left, and he could be on the left, and Nunes could be on the left, and Gakpo could be on the left. So there's a lot of players who can be on the left.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
It's a good thing now for Liverpool, though. They've got a front five where, whatever the combination, it's not weaker, is it? It's not like in times gone by where Origi's gone down the middle and Firmino's not playing. You think, well, that's clearly a bit of a downgrade, or Minamino's playing, or Danny Ings, for example, or even going way back to the Benteke era. Now it's whoever starts in that front three, it's very much this is the front three that they've chosen based on this particular game, as opposed to making changes and decreasing the quality. I think all five of those players are capable of getting double figures. I think the only one I was maybe a little bit unsure of was Diaz, and he's already up to two games in. So those front five, I've just written a little thing about it there. They've scored, since Diaz came back, you mentioned there, though, the Leeds game, since Diaz's return. Since then, Liverpool have scored 29 Premier League goals, and those five players have scored 22 of them. So, as I say, it's a big season for all of them, and whoever they pick, you still fancy them to cause problems.
Well, one man who really impressed on Saturday was new signing Dominic Szoboszlai. Doyle, you can just tell, can't you, when clubs sign a player and they're a really good player. And I think in the first couple of games, he's just impressed so much. How good a game did he have on Saturday, and what sort of impact do you think he'll have going forward?
Well, it doesn't look like his signing is going to be a sob story. Thank you. Joe just left the room, everybody. Yeah. Come back.
I won't sob a sly.
Sob a sly. You can go.
There's some bookable offences.
Yeah, there is.
Of course, he's the only one still on the pitch at this point.
He's not been brought on, that's why. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about the...
About the red card first? Let's talk about the red card first.
Okay, the red card first.
I've
got it written down. Talk about the red card.
Okay, talk about the red card.
Carefully curated agenda.
Yeah, look. Like here, there.
He's got little star points, bullet points as well. Very good. It wasn't a red card, was it? Let's be honest. No. I mean, even at the time, didn't you think it was a booking? Just thought there'd be like I mean, you can see, okay, from a very specific, going absolutely by the letter of the law, you can see why there's a discussion being had over whether it should be a red card and therefore the referee's given it. But once the referee gives it, and we all see the replay and go, well, that's clearly not a red card. He's gone after, at the very least, someone has to have a look at it. It's like... The VAR, who was it? Paul Tierney and Constantine.
Mr. Tierney?
What's his name?
Hazardakis.
That's it, yeah.
Hazardakis.
They've obviously. I mean, okay, right. There's no. I don't think there's corruption in the sense of the referees in football or anything like that. And I think fans who get onto that I just don't get onto that. However, what these two people are human beings. And obviously, one of them has had many a run in with Jurgen Klopp. And if there's a. We just know human nature suggests that they may be inclined to unconsciously, subconsciously make a decision. I don't think the VAR assistant, the other guy, has got anything to do with it.
I think they're at least going to overthink it. I think the problem with having Tierney on Liverpool games now is whatever happens, he knows that every decision he makes. Yeah. So he'll either be too favourable to Liverpool or not favourable enough. Because he'd be overcompensating.
And that depends on what he's like as a character. He could be really stubborn and go, well, I actually think that this is definitely a red card. Yes, the referee's given that. And also, they could just say, well, the referee gave that decision, so we're just going to wash our hands of that one. It's like turn a blind eye.
Yeah, but at the same time, I can understand this idea that you can't put a referee on a certain team. I mean, I don't fully agree with it. I know Clattenburg didn't referee an Everton game for God knows how long, because they still talk about 2007, But I don't think that that's the right approach. I think that you have to accept that referees are going to have really poor games and you just have to move on. But saying that, it doesn't help, does it, when every time the decision seems to be on the spotlight?
No, I've seen someone tweeted me before saying perhaps the reason it wasn't overturned he's a new referee and he didn't really want to undermine him in like his first big game. I mean, I'd never heard of Thomas Bramall.
I think it was his eighth Premier League game ever, or sixth or seventh, that it was the first time he'd done Liverpool anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, so that possibly could be correct, but they've only just made it worse, haven't they? They've made it worse for him.
But that is VAR, though, in a nutshell for me, is that if it's not allowed to intervene, then all it does is add another layer of frustration for people who say, well, everyone else thought that wasn't...
What they could have just done, they could have just said, look, this is a bit of a 50-50, go and have a look for yourself. Yeah, that's all they had to do. If he then backs himself up on that, then that's fine. Because I genuinely don't think Liverpool could really appeal it if the referees looked at it twice.
Yeah.
That just come out just before we started recording. So, I mean, Liverpool need McAllister, don't they? Because they can't, the midfielders are short as it is. They can't be hoping for Endo to dive into that Newcastle game Sunday. And
you can't be the be-all and
don't. Endo.
Do you think they'll succeed with the appeal?
Did you like that one? Yeah, you did that.
Honestly, I can't second guess any of these referees anymore, because I was looking at that thinking, oh no, this will be fine, this one could have held, and lo and behold, it is. So I just don't second guess them anymore. Same with the offsides. Just wait and tell me what it is, because I can have my opinion and I'll be told when I'm wrong. So
I think there's no way. I don't think.
By the way, Szoboszlai had a good game.
Can we talk about
so you both think McAllister will be suspended, do you?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think they might fudge it and take it down to one game.
I just think they
I don't even know whether they can do that. Mm-hmm. I mean, there must be, it's their rules, they can do what they want.
Yeah.
Three games for that is ridiculous.
That's ridiculous, and I would at least hope that they do that. You know, they say, okay, it wasn't that bad. But at the same time, I just can't imagine they'll say, oh, the studs were showing, but
and then
every stud showing tackle shouldn't be a red card, because
Tyrone Mings.
Yeah, I mean the one Chelsea last week, someone caught who got caught with their studs in the chest. Kanate got caught.
Did he?
Yeah, the studs in the chest. Remember. He can't. Well, but it was a yellow card. That is so much worse than McAllister's.
Do you mean Mings for Aston Villa?
Yeah, against
Gakpo.
Yeah, that ripped the shirt.
But that's same thing happened.
But the thing on that one, I never thought that was a red card at any point. I just didn't think it was a red card. I just think he was clumsy and he caught him really high up.
I don't think the Chelsea one was. But then if the Chelsea one isn't and this one, and Mings isn't, then McAllister isn't even a yellow card.
But then look at the one that Jota got away with at Tottenham when he kicked off the skin. Yeah.
But then again, I don't think that was one either. Basically, I'm just quite happy with players going and kicking each other.
Leave your boots in.
I think you've got to accept an element of physicality and that you will catch some people sometimes and not everything is a red card. But anyway, we all agree it's not a red card.
Anyway, Szoboszlai,
Szoboszlai. So, yeah. Played very, 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 very.
He did. Well. What I thought was quite interesting about him is that, I mentioned this in the verdict, that I had to do because Paul was away. Paul back on verdicts from this weekend on. Is he?
Yeah.
Yes.
Sunday?
I forgot. Yeah, you're here, aren't you? Of course you are. You're back. You're here, yeah. Where are we going?
Newcastle.
That's all. anyway, yeah. In the second half, he took on that responsibility when McAllister got sent off. Mm-hmm. And you could see that he's a captain of his country, even though he's only 22. And it was the way that, while everything else around him was like getting a little bit hectic, he was the one that not so much put his foot on the ball, but just went looking for it and said, right, we're going to do this.
Yeah.
He kind of dictated the tempo a bit, certainly dictated the way Liverpool were playing. And the crowd got onto that reasonably quickly. I thought he started the game quite slowly, but even there were patches then in the first half, getting towards half-time, where the reason Liverpool improved is because he improved and got more into it. And I think he started, when they first started in the summer, he was on the left of the midfield three. But when McAllister's gone back to the number six, he's been up on the right because obviously Gakpo's been on the left. And he's just as good over there as he can be on the left. So he's got that versatility. I wouldn't want him as a number six, like. But I think he can do those other three, like the attacking midfield as well. And of course, there's a couple of times, wasn't there, where the crowd were telling him to shoot and he opted not to. And then, of course, when he did actually then have a shot, the keeper spills it and Jota gets in and gets the goal, which in terms of nicely timed goals, I think about 4 or 5 minutes after a player's been sent off, that's probably a good time to go two goals ahead.
Huge goal, that.
Yeah, it's a massive one because then you knew Liverpool, not only did Liverpool have something to defend, but Bournemouth couldn't take their time with going forward, and then that meant that Liverpool, as I mentioned before, were able to pick them off on the counter because of the hard work of the front three and the fact that Szoboszlai in the middle at one point was the only actual midfielder on the pitch, wasn't he, for a little short while, about 5 minutes after the sending off. He stepped up and said the crowd loved it, got man of the match, got player of the match in the Echo ratings. And
that's the real barometer.
He got a quality 9, which, as you know...
Did he get a 9?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Did he get a 9, yeah?
I forgot. I don't remember all your ratings.
Yeah, he was only a 6 on half-time, though.
Yeah, because he started poorly. A bunch of... Hang on, before they made it... 1-1. The players run about 4.
They win at half time, aren't they?
Yeah, but I'm saying is that, you can be terrible. I'm not saying he was doing this, but you can be terrible for 43 minutes. Just because you scored 2 goals, it doesn't necessarily mean everybody gets up to a 7.
Okay, look, in a summer...
Don't berate me on my ratings.
Berate you.
Berating.
This is awful. It's been a summer of midfielders, Gorsty. Real Madrid signed a certain big one. Arsenal spent 100 million on one. Chelsea spent 115 million on one. I can't remember his name. Liverpool have been trying to sign a lot of them. Man City have been trying to sign one. Liverpool got out and spent 60 million on Szoboszlai, and he's nowhere near the headline deal of the summer. But I look at him and look at his attributes and look at the way he fits into a Klopp team, look at his age, look at his experience and think Liverpool might have got one of the deals of the summer there quite quickly, quite quietly, without really getting the credit for it.
Yeah, he's big, he's strong, he's got a fantastic engine on him, hasn't he? You've seen with some of the runs that he was prepared to make, particularly on the right side, and carried the ball in, and that was one of the kind of key early things that you noticed about him, wasn't it? Certainly the players did anyway, when he did the bleep test, and he's rivaling Mo Salah for the number one spot, and he's very good in possession. He's got a great shot on him, two-footed, and I agree with Doyle, he really took control, particularly in the second half. There was a little bit of a passage of play there where he kind of plays a little 1-2 and he gets up the pitch, knocks it around someone else, goes past the halfway line, could shape to shoot, and then plays it out wide. I think it's Trent or maybe Jota, and it was just an all-round quality bit of play, and he has a massive hand in the goal that eventually kills off Bournemouth's resolve. And Yeah, his home debut goal was excellent. Looking forward to seeing him in the flesh. Looking forward to seeing him in the coming weeks and months. And to top it all off, he likes to speak to reporters after the game, doesn't he? So that'll come.
Although he did ignore, he didn't do us this time because he did have 15 interviews with the Hungarian press. So I don't blame him for that one. But, oh, by the way, Naby Keita started his Liverpool career well. I think we just
That's true.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
But it's funny with the, you know, you say he speaks to reporters, and obviously Endo spoke to some reporters as well at the end of the game.
You've got to stop this. It's like a therapy session for your puns.
But you know, it seems like that seems like something that we only care about. But actually, to me, I look at Szoboszlai and Endo, and I think that shows confidence. It shows leadership. It shows, you know, we've seen that with Van Dijk. Is a man who is always stopping, and that is because he's self confident.
Van Dijk stops
but that to me shows character. Yeah. And I think Liverpool need character.
Yeah, I mean, Szoboszlai's only 22, so he's got uber confidence for such a young lad. You know, if I was 22 when I was in Hungary and I was a footballer, I'd be terrified to speak to anyone. So for him to come out and speak about, you know, a difficult game and a number of things that could have went wrong and did go wrong and already shows that he does have those qualities, and I think it's a bit of a theme within the Liverpool squad. Obviously, they've lost some leaders this summer, literal leaders in the captain and the vice captain. But you've got Van Dijk stepping up, captain of Holland. Trent is now the vice captain. Andy Robertson's the skipper for Scotland. Szoboszlai for Hungary. Salah for Egypt. And players like Konate seem to be growing in responsibility and things. Yeah. So I think. Liverpool don't have any worries on that score, to be honest.
Yeah. Dorothy, we've spoken about the front three, front four, but another player that didn't really feature at the weekend and probably hasn't featured as much as he liked is Darwin Nunes. Mm. What are your thoughts on him? Is it okay? Is it just natural? Or should he be slightly worried that he hasn't had more playing time?
He's only played two games.
It's
two games.
I've got to talk about something, Dwayne.
He's had nearly 40 minutes.
I think he's trying to make a good point there.
You know, I was just saying, he didn't start much towards the back end.
I think it's in the 12 games that they've been unbeaten. I think he started two or three, which isn't, I don't think that's a coincidence.
Mm. Is that just part of the development for him, do you think? Or is it an alarm bell?
I don't think it's an alarm bell, is it? Let's be honest. He was injured for three of them, don't forget. So there was that. And also,
when it's that open at the moment behind him.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? Once things tighten down a little bit, you've got more chance of him playing. I think he looks a lot, from what I saw in the summer, he looks a lot more composed, a lot more confident in himself. And I think if there was any frustrations on Saturday, it's just he'd get more minutes.
Yeah.
And I think, rather than frustration in the past, which possibly been at himself for being this, that, or not being what he wanted to be. I do think, you said the manager doesn't trust him 100%.
I think there's an element of that. I think you're probably right there,
in terms of what he wants him to do.
For example,
I also think his English probably needs to, from what we hear, once that improves a little bit more, that'll help, because Liverpool have had the biggest tactical change they've had in about the past 5 or 6 years has come in the season where he's come in and has been like, hang on, I came to this team that was meant to be playing this way and now we're changing it to this way. What's going on?
Here's an example why, I don't think the manager trusts him. I think if they'd had 11 players the weekend, he might have gotten the pitch. But because they had 10, you know, that we saw the likes of Tsimikas. And it's natural, isn't it? You bring more defensive players on rather than attacking.
Yeah, it's not just but
if you look at him, you think, would you trust Darwin Nunes to keep hold of the ball to defend from the front.
Well, to be fair, I don't think he quite did do a bit of it. One of the first things he did was run across, chase down somebody, tackle him, get the ball out, and all the crowd go Nunes. So
I don't think there's any real problem here. I think the only issue for Nunes is the fact that he costs a lot more than everyone else who he's trying to get in the team ahead of. I think if he's the same price tag as Diaz and Gakpo and Jota, I think he's just another option. But the fact that he costs 25 million more through no fault of his own, I think that's when it starts to become a little bit more of an external issue and people are analysing it maybe a little bit more. But
don't you think that for him in his own head, he needs to block out that noise now and just accept that it's a natural part of a transition? And in a bigger club, Liverpool aren't Benfica,
I don't necessarily think he's thinking like that. I think that's
maybe he's not, but that's the worry I have.
Well, he's playing for a team that's got five good forwards, and they're going to have a sixth one with Doke when he actually starts developing a bit.
It'd be no surprise if he starts Saturday, was it? You know, where
he's good there, isn't he?
You know, a team who are going to try and play on the front foot. Liverpool aren't going to come up against many teams who are going to go duel to duel with them or play on the halfway line or whatever, are they? More often than not, it's going to be Liverpool trying to break down teams. But I think Newcastle will fancy it at home on Sunday, and then that's where the space opens up for someone like Nunes to thrive.
See, I'd be stunned if he started Sunday. I think he'd start. He'll start Gakpo.
Would you be shocked?
I'd be shocked.
Would you be aghast?
Aghast.
Really? Yeah. That's a bit negative.
Yeah.
So you're suggesting that you don't want him to start? This is an early team selector, this.
Yeah. I just think, I don't think you drop Diaz right now.
He might not be fit though, might he? I know that he didn't. He just said he was a bit tired,
Okay, yeah, but this is his average fit. You don't drop Diaz.
Only one game a week.
They never drop Salah.
No.
And if you're going to make one change, Jota's scoring goals, but away from home, I don't think he keeps the ball as well. So you bring, you push Gakpo up there. But that's just the challenge for Nunes. And I think I agree. I think it's fine. I think as long as he just knuckles down now, it's about him knuckling down, hopefully adapting, and hopefully they start unleashing him later in the season or playing him in bits and pieces. And, you know, the game just aren't coming thick and fast but they soon will.
Also, you do realise that part of what you've described as Nunes is basically what you said about Jota a bit earlier.
So maybe you
can only play one of them if you've got the choice, that is.
Can I just have a little say on Endo, because I was on Friday.
Have your say. It's not the end of the podcast.
You can also tell us about Hendo, because he went. Fabinho went. It's been ages since you're on a podcast.
If you're out walking the dog or something like that, then choose a longer route. Yeah. That dog's going to be tired.
I think with this Endo move, he's been available all summer, hasn't he? Played for the Stuttgart team, so Liverpool could have gone and got him in June, could have gone in late May. So on its own, doesn't seem like the worst deal. You know, a little bit of squad depth for an experienced player coming in to steady the ship and just be a little bit of a water carrier for the more creative players. But the fact that it's coming a few days after Liverpool miss out for Moises Caicedo and then Romeo Lavia suggests to me that a little bit of panic stations about it. And hope I'm wrong, not to disparage the player in any way, but it just seems as though the joined up thinking isn't necessarily there at the moment, just because of the timing of the deal. And if that is to be the sole defensive midfield recruit this summer, I'd be massively concerned.
Do you think? I'd like to get another midfielder, because I think you saw on Saturday Jones being injured, Gakpo's playing there, really isn't the ideal midfield. But I think, you know, it looks, for all intents and purposes, they really want Gravenberch. If Bayern Munich suddenly say in the last 11 days the transfer window, you know what, he's available, then I think they'd go out and try and make that happen.
What I thought was interesting was that reading Klopp's comments on Friday about, you know, Liverpool had 111 million bid for Caicedo and then don't land them and then sign end up for 16 million. So theoretically they've got another 95 million there to play with or whatever. But he's kind of laughing it off, wasn't he? It doesn't work like that.
Because it depends on how they agreed the deal with Brighton to pay over a certain amount of time. You know, it might be completely different with all the other players.
But they can't pretend that money's not there now and just say, oh, well, you know, we're add up and
they might know it's money over... I'm not defending it, but I'm saying it might know it's money over a certain period. So it's there.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
See, I don't think it comes down to money at all. I think Liverpool treat each transfer differently.
That's what it did prove, is that they didn't sign Lavi because they didn't think he was worth the money.
Yeah. We know that, don't we?
He was worth the money, but I think the market dictates that he's worth that money and that they eventually were going to pay
but
that
Chelsea
money.
Chelsea are the market, as in they just are the market.
Teams like Chelsea have changed the market.
And the Saudi Arabian teams as well.
Yeah, but I think it's interesting. I just don't think that they feel like there's anyone out there that they really like that much at the moment.
Maybe just spinning a few plates or getting a few ducks in a row for the potential of a Tchouaméni, for example. You know, if Real Madrid make a late play for Kylian Mbappe and then realise that they need to lighten the load and whatever else, there is that. But I just don't think Liverpool fans will accept it this summer if it's well, we haven't bought a number six, you know, a long-term number six because the right player, or we're waiting for the right player, because I think they've heard that,
for two years now,
and it's, I don't know if it'll wash this summer.
I think what I would say is that I don't agree that Endo's a panic buy, because if a panic buy, you don't have a panic buy 2 weeks before the deadline. I think it'd been like 2 days before.
It's not an offer, put it that way.
No, yeah. And what I would say, it's probably going like this, right, we're trying to sign Lavia, okay, yeah, we're going to try and sign him, but we don't really want to pay that much. We'll go back and this, that and the others. They got word on Casado and gone, right, okay, right, we can sort this out, made the bid. Obviously, we know that turned out. We know how Lavia turned out. So they went, right, well, we've got these other players. What do you want to do? So should we, okay, like, right, let's try and get him. And they've gone for him and got him and went, okay, Sam, right, we've got that now. So no matter what happens over the next 2 weeks, we know we've got at least one more in. And they will be looking to get somebody in.
I tend to agree with that.
Just avoid some walking the tightrope.
Exactly, yeah. And if he's half as good as what everyone in Germany's saying, getting him for 16 and a quarter million pounds, even if he only plays for like 18 months or something like that, then that's good going. But we're only going to know that then. It's like you can't win the transfer window on September the 1st. You win it on September the 1st 2 years later.
If Liverpool were to sign Caicedo, though, I'd be... quietly optimistic of a title.
What?
A title chance, it would.
I don't think they're going to be anywhere near regardless.
It's one of them. It's difficult
you
to know.
You can tell you didn't do the predictions. Whereas I had them finishing fifth.
It's difficult to know, isn't it? I think Caicedo's price is crazy. I think that you look at Chelsea yesterday, they looked chaotic
and I know,
Caicedo could go on to be a brilliant player, but we've seen it.
I think he will be.
I'm not 100% convinced. What I find fascinating now is that they're happy to spend, and I know that they have a threshold of games that they want to see players play. But what I find fascinating, they spend those sorts of money on players who realistically have one season at the highest level, and that. I just think that's slightly worrying in itself.
They can afford to take the risk.
Yeah, okay,
there's very few teams who can take the risk. Newcastle are refusing to take that risk. I think it's because FFP payments anyway. United have... In fact, it's been a long time since United have done something like that. Since they've paid a load of money for it. Remember, they've been at ones in the past, like Tosic and...
I suppose I was going to say Sancho, like, but he's played a lot.
No, for Sancho. Yeah. And also, he was proven, as far as I'm saying, he just hasn't done it at United. City don't do it. They could do, but they don't. We saw they walked away from Declan Rice because they didn't think
City
he was the right...
City have lost out on loads of targets.
But they know quite well that they can then just keep on going for the next one and the next one and the next one.
Yeah.
That's their safety net, as it were.
Yeah.
Whereas Liverpool, again, can't do that. They, as we've seen, if they need to get away from, as you mentioned before, if we can't get the right one in, just get somebody in, which is what they've done this time. And now everyone's gone, what are you doing?
I don't think everyone, to be fair. I'm encouraged that this time they said, you know what, he's 30, but he takes, Clough had to persuade the owners
to do it this time, because I think I hope this is right, he's the third oldest player Liverpool have ever bought for FSG.
Yeah.
Second was Clavan, who was 30 as well, and the oldest one was Ricky Lambert.
Yeah. But I think that's heartening, and I think that's good that they've done that. Hopefully that shows them that they can sign. And I think the way you look at the experience Liverpool have lost, I'm glad to go and see them sign a few older players. I think you need a mix.
Yeah.
You can't just play and win the league with loads of 23-year-olds. Man City always have a mix. I think it's good that they've done that. I would like to see them sign two more players, another midfielder. It doesn't necessarily have to be a number six. Just another midfielder who gives them more balance. And I think they need a centre-back.
I think they need a centre-back.
And I'd be slightly worried if they don't.
I think they need a centre-back ahead of a midfielder, because... Yeah. Even if, let's say, four of the midfielders are out, there are still four that they can choose from.
Yeah, if I had to choose, I would choose a centre half now.
Because I think Matip's going to go at the end of the season, and I think Van Dijk will be, 32, 33 then?
He was 32 in June, so he'll be 33 before next season.
And they need someone who's going to be the long term replacement for him on that side of the defence, because I think this might be a season, if they get somebody in that Van Dijk doesn't play all the games and is pick and choose, certainly in the Europa League, League Cup, all those kind of things.
My worry is that poor planning in midfield and this whole summer looking at buying a number of midfielders has masked another similar problem.
Yeah.
If they don't get a centre half, they could be facing next
year. I would say that it hasn't masked it, because Klopp knew about it in May.
But they couldn't prioritise that, could they? They couldn't prioritise that when Fabinho leaves and they're like, oh, great.
But then Fabinho was... The minute that Alpha happens, Fabinho's going.
I suppose, but my point is if they bought a midfielder last year, if they bought a midfielder the summer before that, then they wouldn't have to buy three midfielders this year, even if Fabinho leaves. They still could have gone, OK, we need one more midfielder. But instead, they deferred to this year, and then they went, we're losing loads on free transfers. We've lost a couple we didn't expect, which can always happen. Yeah. Now we need three players minimum. And centre-halves, we can't prioritise centre-halves because you've got centre-halves.
You can't enter the Balogun race because you need three.
Yeah.
Well,
so
you're right.
Just messed everything up. You're right, but
it's gone now. So
I know it's gone. But
it's no point wasting too much time. They need to spend the time now deciding what they're going to do next.
Yeah.
When it came out that Liverpool were no longer kind of off the table for Bellingham, I had no idea what an acceptable transfer window would have looked like to me. But I knew that Caicedo was one of the ones that I wanted. So when it came out, obviously I was after it. Liverpool were right in the hunt for him. I was thinking this is a proper kind of statement for Liverpool.
Got,
and then within 8 hours, it was like,
you got proper upset, didn't you?
I just thought Liverpool are going to get a top player. Oh no, they're not.
The only thing I would say Liverpool didn't. The only thing Liverpool did wrong in that deal
didn't go early enough. Yeah.
And I think he clearly just used Liverpool.
I think when could they have gone in? They could only have gone in after they had sold Fabinho.
Yeah.
But maybe
they did and they said, well, Chelsea, he's definitely going to Chelsea. And then they got the nod saying, well, actually, he might not be now because they can't afford him. So,
but again, though, to me, you take this back 3 years.
But we've just done this.
But he underlines a point, doesn't he? Is that if Liverpool had bought a player last summer and a player the year before in the Szoboszlai and McAllister positions, then they got through to this year and they could have gone, Fabinho had a poor season last year. He's 29. We need to plan ahead. Let's start talking to Caicedo, those people, and then you potentially have a chance. But instead,
they're reacting. Then.
Chelsea started talking to Caicedo. Chelsea started talking to Caicedo, didn't they? Clearly, earlier in the summer or late last season, Liverpool could have done that had they had other players and other positions. But instead, they left everything to this year, so they've been reacting all summer.
Well, they haven't been reacting all summer, have they? Let's be honest. Here's the question.
I'm not
defending anybody. I'm just going to ask you a question now. If the transfer window ends in terms of midfielders, that they signed Szoboszlai and McAllister and Fabinho and Henderson are still there, are you absolutely massively worried about going into the new season?
No.
So they've had to react to Fabinho and Henderson.
But they were there
before either of those went.
That's my point. When you've got Henderson, who was 32, and Fabinho, who was 29,
they were always planning ahead, they were looking to get another one in, weren't they? That was going to be probably Lavia to replace Fabinho long term.
But even Lavia, they could have worked on earlier if they.
If they'd got
a McAllister type player last summer, he could have been in the squad. I just think that last summer the biggest mistake they made, and they should have done it the year they signed. Well, 2 years ago, they should have done it then. They should have bought a midfielder then. I'm convinced it cost them that season, even though they went close to four trophies. Last season, they should have bought a midfielder, and they deferred again. So then they needed three this summer. And even if you're saying, okay, well, they only needed the third because two players left, they could have planned for that player proactively rather than going, players left. I know we already knew this, but
it's not as if they didn't have any money because they signed Gakpo and they signed Diaz. And they signed £85 million and they committed all that money on Nunes.
I don't know what the point you're trying to make. They still should have planned in that position, shouldn't they? There was clearly a bad plan in there. My worry is that they prioritised
the forward line to the midfield because they had so many midfielders in the squad, is what my reading of it was. And they thought they'd get through last season without all of the injuries that they ended up did get. But we've said all this a million times over.
I know, we're going back over old ground.
We've got 2 weeks to go. In the transfer window, was it 10, 12 days now? That's 10 days, isn't it? 10 days. So, do you want them to get in a midfielder or a centre back?
Oh, a centre back, personally.
I mean, ideally, I'd still be after two. You know, if this Caicedo, if these Americans have got the if I had to choose one or the other, probably a centre back now.
Because yeah. I'd go with the centre back as well.
I would go to a centre back,
but you know quite well the minute they sign a centre back, three midfielders. Yeah, we'll get that's yeah. exactly what.
But this is why
they've already got two injured. Anthony Jones and Thiago's back in training.
But by the same token, you know quite well that some of those centre backs are going to get injured this season. That's exactly why I'm saying you need to prioritise the centre back now.
There's doubts as well over.
Yeah,
two of them.
Yeah,
and that's my worry. Is next year they don't sign a centre half. Now next year we're having this conversation about defence, saying Van Dijk is at the end of his career, Matip's gone, Konate's got injured. Who plays centre half? Liverpool. Oh, they need three.
Yeah.
So there you go. That's our crystal ball. 5 weeks of pods in one. 55 minutes.
55 minutes. Anyway, what would your team have been for Bournemouth? By the way, I got the score right, 3-1. So
I got the score right.
Did you? You didn't say 3-1, Theo.
Kiefer said 2-0.
Was Theo even in the podcast? No. It was Tom, wasn't it?
It's Kiefer, wasn't it?
Oh, I don't know. It was Friday.
We will leave it there because it feels like Friday now and it's Monday. But we will be back on Friday.
Will we?
We'll be back on Friday to look ahead to Newcastle. Very big game. We'll see you then.
And any more, hang on, before you go, have you got any more endo?
This is the endo of the podcast. Ta-ra.
You've been listening to the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.